Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Influence podcast. I'm your host, Fong Chua, and with me again, of course, is the happiest person on earth, Stacey McPherson. On the show, our aim is to break down the barriers of public speaking and allowing you to succeed and become the voice of influence. Welcome back, Stacey. How are you?
Hello, everyone. Good to be here.
Always, always a joy. And look at that smile. That smile always, always brightens the room, as I've alluded to last time about the power introductions. How you just walk on stage and everybody's like, wow, I need to hear more about this person because she shines every time she shows up on stage and has an amazing, amazing smile. So welcome back.
Thank you, Fong. You have an amazing smile too, and your positive nature. Woo!
Thank you, thank you. So today we have two other topics that we would like to jump onto, and those topics are creating content and also engaging and connecting with the audience. Two things I think is very, very important, because if you don't have content, then why are you up there? And two, if you cannot connect with the audience, then why are they listening? So when it comes to content creation, what's your strategy on creating content? I know lots of people out there are saying, I don't know what to sp speak about. Who am I to talk about this? I'm not good enough to talk about that. Or how do I create this? They always have something to talk about. They just don't know how to put it together. So how do you do it?
Well, a lot of times people are reinventing something that's already been said. They're taking lots of things that have already been said and then making it their own. And one of the things that I have a little bit of a leg up with is I have a unique patented process for my coaching, and I can apply it to literally every topic out there. Like the way that I use this patented process, I can use it to talk about exercise. I can use it to talk about child re rearing. I can use it for business settings. I can use it for health and wellness. Like it's really kind of amazing if you have something that's unique that's not out there. And believe me, I've tried to find it out there. I've spent 7 years trying to find someone else who's teaching the same stuff, and it's just mine. And so I get to put my own flair, my own flavor when I'm talking about literally anything. So I could talk for days. I could talk for days and days and days. And I really am feeling lucky that way. But for everyone who doesn't have something unique, I want to share this, and that is that you are unique. It doesn't matter what you're sharing, you're going to share it in a way that's your own flavor, your own way of being and doing things, even if it's the same message that someone else is giving. And think about this: there are people out there who resonate with you, who will listen to you, and they won't listen to someone else giving the same message. So you want to realize that those people are out there and they are looking for you. It's not just like, you have to try to find them, but they're also looking for you. And once they find you, your message is going to resonate with them, and you're going to impact them in ways that someone else won't be able to, even if they deliver the exact same content.
Totally agreed. Something that I share with a lot of my clients when it comes to their book writing, and it's very similar to being able to stand on stage and speak about a message or a story or whatnot, is that over the last 100 years, nothing new has been written, but your voice hasn't been heard and your version hasn't been heard. And the thing is, I could write the same book, I could do the same presentation, same speech as everybody out there with their content, but I may or may not be able to connect with the same people that will connect to you or to Sam or to Jocelyn or to whoever, because their voice is different, their experience is different, their style is different. So therefore, every single moment that you're not spreading your message in your way, in your voice, is every moment you're depriving those followers, those people who gravitate to you, from learning about that message. And that was told to me when I was struggling about writing my book. And now I'm sharing that to everybody I talk to, because I think everybody has a message. Everybody can create that content. Everybody can write that book and go out there and talk about it, because everybody's version is a little bit different. Now, when it comes to content creation, one of the biggest issues that people have is, yes, they don't know what to write about, but the thing or talk about. But the thing is, once you start asking questions, all of a sudden they can fill in the blanks. For instance, so what's very important to you and what do you think people should know? And then all of a sudden they go, well, I think they really should know more about money management. I'm like, oh, really? What are three important things about money management that you think people should know about? And all of a sudden they go, well, I have more than five. what do I do? I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? When you start asking questions, you realize that you have so much more content that you can share, that your problem now is how do I shrink it down so I can fit that lot of timeline? Right? So
Yeah.
for you, when it comes to brainstorming stuff, how do you do it when there's so much stuff that you could actually share?
That's so funny you would ask me that because I was thinking about this and I was like, I'm going to ask Fong this question. Do you start with a lot of content and need to narrow it down? What is your process like?
Well, yes, I do. So I usually, when I prepare for something or create content for something, I usually just go and okay, give as much as I can. Now, do I need to shrink it down? If I do, then I'll pick out the most important ones or the most impactful ones, and then I can always come up with either a second show, a second video, or whatever to do the other stuff and to complete the rest of the thought. The thing is, we all try to cram everything within a certain opportunity that we forget that opportunities will always come. If I wanted to do a video about mindset, well, I could talk about that for hours on end if I really needed to, but nobody's going to sit there and listen to it for hours on end. So separate it, two, three, four episodes about mindset, right? You can always break it down and you can always adjust things as to how it will be delivered with the most impact and most efficiently. What about yourself?
Yeah, oh, that's so good. Yes, I agree. I love how you were talking about like looking through your notes and finding the most impactful, most important parts. Like that is something sometimes people kind of get in the weeds of it and like just you don't step back from all of the weeds and say, what is the core message here? What is the just the clear, concise, most important part? And what do I want to convey? And then bringing that out first, and then the things will just kind of follow. I love that. I had a something that I was really passionate about sharing, and I felt that way that you kind of alluded to, Fong, where it feels like at first where you're like, I want to pack all of this in because it's all good. Like I don't want to leave anything out. But then to realize, yes, there will always be more opportunities, and you can create them, especially the way that Fong has done with his podcast. It's like he shares bits and bits of his wisdom throughout each of his podcasts, and so you can find if there was something else he wanted to say, he could say it in a future one. So that's really good advice. I like
Awesome.
that.
When it comes to content creation, one thing I highly recommend people do is go through your mind and your memory about the stories that you have to share. Life stories, experiences, and try and pick out what those stories are sharing with regards to a life lesson. And if you have a whole list of these stories that you can take out as needed, that is very, very advantageous because you never know when you're put on the spot, especially when it comes to impromptu questions or interview questions or improv situations. It's always great that you can pull a story from your past experience or memory and share that story. And you know for a fact you could fill 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, different versions of that story could do 10 minutes or 20 minutes so that you go, okay, if I do this version, I could do this much time. If you do this version, I could do this much time. Oh, you're talking about persistency? Great. I have a story about that. Oh, you have a question about mindset? Okay, I got a story about that. It's so important to go through that Rolodex or that data bank of stories that you have and find out, hey, what's funny about that? What did I learn? What's funny about this? What should people know about? And it goes a whole lot farther along when it comes to content creation because you could pick those stories out.
Yes, it's so good. And stories are so powerful. They convey a point so well. They engage the audience and they're easy for us to remember. When you're practicing a speech and you have a lot of quotes or a lot of data or research, that takes quite a bit of time and effort to memorize to have the delivery be smooth. But stories, you can just say them from the heart, especially if it's about yourself. And I love your advice about gathering the stories. And I actually, someone gave me the advice of creating a timeline of my life. And then in each timeline, come up with stories memories and that we create a story. And sometimes the story itself doesn't have to be like this powerful, amazing, and I did this. It's just something that, like Fong said, can teach a lesson, or you can align it with a topic. And so you can do it in advance where you write down all the stories and then you suggest topics that could be covered. And then also you can go the opposite way and say, I have this topic, and then go through and read your bullet points to represent each of your stories and say, which story could I tell? And things might connect in different ways. You might not have thought at first that this story would be perfect for teaching this particular principle, but then in hindsight, when you look through it, you're like, oh, this would be perfect. So yes.
I'm going to put you on the spot then.
Okay.
A go-to story that you love sharing that shares a moment of humor and a great life lesson.
Okay. So this is my favorite one. So you're walking along and it's a beautiful day and the sun is shining and the birds are singing, and up ahead you see a park and it has these lovely winding paths and hills. And so you start to go into the park, and as you're walking along, you see up ahead on the hill something sparkling and glittering in the distance. And so as you get closer, you look down and you see it's a pile of broken glass. Well, this morning you decided to put on some comfortable, sturdy shoes to walk through this park or have your walk for the day, and you could easily walk right through that glass. You have thick soles and heavy tread, no problem. But instead, you reach down and you slowly unlace the shoes and take them off. And then you take your socks off and you walk right through that glass. Okay, you're standing there on the other side. You look down, your feet are cut and bleeding, and you say, Stacy, I would never do that. So this is my story that I can bring out all kinds of different principles. And the main principle is that we all have a space in time when we're approaching the problems in life. We have a space where we can keep our shoes on, meaning our positive internal state, or we can take them off and freak out and be upset. And then the problem has the power to give us emotional pain. So that's just a fun one.
Awesome. I'll let you choose. I have a story about perspective. I have a story about asking for a second opinion. And I have a story about how systems may or may not be effective as you think it would be.
Okay, let's do systems.
Okay, so I'm not sure if you know, but my wife and I got married at Disney World. And the reason why we got married at Disney World was because we're big fans of Disney. And the first thing that she said when I said, hey, let's do a destination wedding, and she goes, no sand. So that just eliminated all beaches, no Mexico, no Caribbean, and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, how about Disney? And she goes, oh yeah, okay, let's do that. Well, there's systems in place in Disney where they'll take your information. They want to make sure that every single thing is taken care of and whatnot. So you have to call them to book the wedding pavilion. You have to call them to book the, the reservations for the restaurant, they get the pastor there and all that kind of stuff. Now, I have to say, that system you would think is pristine, but it's not as pristine as you may want to think. They think that every time they ask you a question to find out, hey, what are you celebrating, is going to make you feel good. But let's put it this way. I had to make many, many phone calls. And the most unfortunate thing is I would be talking to the wedding group, but they're not connected to the reservations for the hotel. And they're not connected to the reservations for the restaurant. So therefore, I had to call three separate times or whatever many times to all the different things that I need to connect. And each time they go with a script, which is their system. So what are you celebrating with us today? Well, I'm getting married. Congratulations. I'm like, well, thank you. Well, that is great. The first maybe two times. But by the fifth time, they ask, hey, what are you celebrating? I'm like, well, we're having our wedding there. She goes, congratulations. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, you know, let's move on. It got to the point where I got annoyed with the congratulations, which is completely not what they wanted. But that's where systems fail. When they don't connect everything together, the profile's there. I'm pretty sure it's on file. Why are you asking me over and over and over again? So the lesson is, when, yes, systems are important, but you may want to go through it and kind of find out the kinks of it so that you can make it not completely concrete, so that there's some, you know, flexibility in your systems so that you're not pissing off your clientele. So
yes,
that's my story about that.
I love it. I love it. That's awesome. And it shares a little bit about you and your background. I love that. It's so much fun.
Well, anything else you want to share about content creation?
No, I think I'm good, but I'm so excited about talking about the next one, connecting with the audience. And I wondered, so what are your tips and tricks? How can you help people connect better with their audiences?
Well, I know we kind of started this conversation a few episodes ago about what's in it for me, what's in it for the audience. From that perspective, it's okay, what kind of value am I adding with regards to the content I'm giving so that they are engaged? Asking the questions when you're on stage, finding out what type of audience it is, and finding out why they're there to begin with. But another way of connecting with the audience, I think we talked about this a little bit before about in introductions, is that, hey, you want them to be engaged with your talk, with your presentation. I love doing some kind of exercise at the beginning. I love asking engaging questions at the beginning of my talk so that they are in it right away. Their energy is up right away. Now, something else I do is if it's a live event, I love going to the event early so that one, I get to connect with people who are there in the audience. Maybe picking out a few people who I know by name, or maybe just to get to know other people coming in, why are they there? And then when I'm on stage, there's a connection between me and the audience because they already met me prior to me being on stage. But I also am able to pick people out by saying, oh, I met this person. Oh, I had a great conversation with this person on stage in my presentation. But the moment I am able to refer to other people in the audience, the audience as a group goes, oh, as a group, we're represented in the presentation. So there's a connection there as well. What are some of the things that you do? Because that's what I like doing. I like being able to incorporate people in the audience into the presentation so that they all feel like there's a connection in place. What do you do?
Oh, that's so good. I love it. I love it. If I have time, I love to bring someone up on the stage. That's my favorite, is if I ask for volunteers and I bring someone up and everyone is like, woo, like the attention is so powerful. You feel like you can just feel it because everyone's putting themselves on the stage. Like that could have been me. And so you see it if you watch, you know, any kind of like show on TV where they interact with the audience. Whenever they bring an audience member up, it's just so much more impactful. So I'll do that. But generally, you have to have at least 15 minutes on the stage in order to bring someone up because you can't always guarantee how much time it's going to take with them, especially if you're asking questions or interacting with them in some way, you can't gauge it. So it's the very best if you have a much longer time on the stage. But that's my favorite. So
One
yes.
of the things I love doing if I'm bringing somebody on stage, usually I try and pick people who, one, don't have a lot of experience on stage, and it's going to be a wow experience for them. And therefore, if they're on stage, I might ask them a question or ask them to say something or do something, and then quickly do a step back and take a quick picture of them on stage in front of so many people, and then go, hey, look, now you have a great photo to tell people, hey, you just spoke in front of all these people. And all of a sudden they're like, wow, this is something I would never get. I'm like, that's something that I love doing because it
Oh.
really makes them shine.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, everyone can benefit from that tip. That's really awesome. I have a question for you. How do you connect with the audience when it's a virtual audience?
That is a lot tougher. And I've had some experience where I'm speaking like across seas virtually, and different cultures have different ways of engagement. The toughest to engage is when virtually there's nobody on scene, right? Everybody has their cameras off, and you're just kind of stuck going, I don't
Yes.
know how they feel. I don't know if they're paying attention. And that's when you try and utilize the chat box as much as you can. I had an experience speaking with a group in, I believe it was Singapore. And man, they use that chat box so effectively. The person who's introducing me will go, hey, everybody, please welcome up Fong. He's going to be giving this great content about branding and speaking. Let's show him some love on the chat box. Type in Fong, 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 Fong. And I saw all these Fongs come on the chat box. And then the host will also encourage the audience virtually to put in certain words that go, hey, what did you find engaging in the talk? And then go, oh, branding. And then you have them really engage in the chat. And that's how I think is one of the best ways to get people engaged is asking questions for them to respond in the chat box or giving direction so that they can do stuff in the chat box, whether it's telling them to repeat the person's name and saying yay or saying keywords. Getting them engaged there allows them to pay attention more.
I agree. I agree. That's so true. And they're reading other people's comments, and they're feeling like they're a part of it, especially like you said, when they're off camera. That's the hardest. And then what about when they're on camera and you've got like a whole screen of people? How do you connect in that way?
You try and get them to do certain things, like, hey, everybody, put your hands up, or hey, everybody, give me a thumbs up. Something I think that you do a lot, and I see you do it very, very well, is one, you first ask people, hey, everybody, turn your cameras on so we can make a great photo of everybody online, right? And you've done that a few times, and everybody's like, yeah, sure, turn their camera on, and they do a pose or do a great smile. That's one way of bringing it. And also, if I see people starting to kind of doze off or lose interest, I try to do something like that to get their engagement. Hey, everybody, let's do something online here. Let's find a quick object, or find a quick whatever it is on your desk and share with everybody online right now. Just something.
That's good. That's really, really good. I love that. Awesome.
So when it comes to connecting on stage, what are some of the things that you say or you ask to get a gauge of what the audience is feeling,
Yeah,
or
that's a
some maybe activities that you get people to do?
So one thing is, if you have the time, I love asking everyone to stand up. That just changes it like that. Like everyone gets to stretch, you know, and it can take like less than a minute out of your speech, but it's like, oh, yes, Stacey cares about me. She let me stand up. And then it gets kind of that endorphin from a little bit of activity going through their system. And then when they sit back down, then they're like alive and awake. So that's one. What about you?
I think you've seen my hee hee hoo ha thing, where I get everybody, where I split the audience up into three sessions and have them say a word, and I point to them and kind of play it that way. That's one way I do it. The other way I do it is hey, everybody, stand up. Let's give me a power pose or something, just to get them out of their seats to feel a little bit more comfortable. Other than that, it's really just, hey, everybody, relax, have fun. And just get engaged with what we're talking about. Ask questions. One thing online I find is very, very effective is calling people out. And when you call people out, all of a sudden other people will go, ooh, I might be called on, or ooh, I might be asked a question, and just getting that feedback. So for instance, during our sessions, there's a lot of times where I go, hey, everybody, let's do popcorn. Give me the first two, three aha moments during the first session. Go. And I will call people by name, and all of a sudden everybody's like, okay, I need to pay attention now because I might be called on upon. So I think that's very, very effective.
That's great. That's great. It's great for attention. It's great for interaction. It's great for helping them be ready, like ready for the next idea. Whatever idea you're throwing out, they're going to catch it much more likely if they're feeling like they're that involved. So that's really great.
And that's where improv comes in again, right? When you have an arsenal of improv games that you can do, whether you're online or on stage, that you could pull out at an instant, you could get the audience engaged and have fun with it, right? Like if
Yep.
you all of a sudden online goes, hey, let's just do a quick game here, and I'll share with you what the lessons are after we play the game. They'll play the game, and then during the time when they're playing that game, you could think about the lesson because you're trying to get everybody involved, and then everybody's gonna have fun. They may or may not remember that you're supposed to tell a lesson. So,
Yeah, that's really good. I love it. Yeah, great example.
cool. Anything else that you want to share about connecting with the audience?
So one thing is eye contact, and if I have a funny story, and that was I ha was attending Toastmasters at the beginning of my journey, and one of the Toastmaster hosts or the people that were putting on the event said that I needed to improve eye contact, and so he was super intimidating. He was like, you know, the powerful and really just really intimidating, really kind of bossy, and so I was like, I got up there and I looked in the face, in the eyes of everyone in that group except him, because he was so intimidating. I couldn't look at him or I would mess up my groove. And so then afterwards, he was like, Stacey, you got to work on eye contact. And I was like, hey, listen, it's not actually that I'm bad at eye contact, it's that I don't want to look at you.
In a good way.
In a good way, you know, like I respected him so much that he was intimidating me.
I'm curious, what was his comment after that?
He was like, "Oh, I didn't know. I will try to not be so intimidating." He was super chill. Like he was a cool guy.
That is awesome. I think we've kind of covered as much as we can about engaging or connecting with the audience for today. But if you have anything else to share about that or any of the previous stuff that we talked about, for instance, the networking or the vocal variety that you want to share again, is there anything else you want to add?
I would just like to encourage the audience because when there are times when you're planning to give a speech where it just feels like too much. It feels like it's too intense. Too much is required of me because there's so many different things I can focus on. It's just it feels like this barrage of things. So just kind of take a step back and say, it's okay. I am where I am, and just by doing it more, I'm going to get better. Just getting on stage more and more times, you're just naturally going to get better. So just kind of take a step back and be like, it's okay if I'm exactly how I am today and I give this speech with all of the things that I would like to improve that I haven't yet. It's okay. That's one. And then also just keep awareness when you're thinking about the speech, because I know sometimes we'll have months to prepare and sometimes just a few weeks. But whenever you think about the speech, kind of check in with your emotional state and just go, is this something I'm still excited about doing? And I think about the benefit that I'm giving the world by sharing my message, or is it more of a, this is too much. I don't want to do it. And I don't feel confident and I don't feel like I'm going to do a good job. So just kind of check in with your feelings. And this even happened to me recently where I was like, I don't feel ready enough for this. And so just kind of realize that your and the way you approach it, the way you allow yourself to carry on those kind of negative thoughts will not make you better. It won't make your presentation better to focus on the things that you want to improve, but you're feeling down about. So kind of change it. Do what you can to change your perspective or your attitude about yourself and about the speech, so that when that thought comes into your head, and it will, when you're not even preparing, you're just going about daily life, when the thought comes into your head about that speech that's coming up, try to do whatever you can to make it be positive instead of negative. Kind of like, I'm excited. Like, I have something to offer. Like, this is growing my talents. Maybe I'm not happy with where I'm at right now, but I'm going to get better. So, like, try to make it more positive and try to focus on the areas where you will feel naturally better about it. So, that's just my advice because it's a big thing. Public speaking is huge. It's emotional for us. It's challenging. It's really, really difficult. Maybe it's not the first thing on our list of things we're afraid of, but it's definitely on that list for a lot of people.
Exactly. And I liked how you said that if it's too much or if it's too overwhelming, one thing that people can do is simplify it. Simplify it so that you are comfortable. Make it shorter, make it different so that it's easier for you to deliver it. Add in more questions. Add in the wonderful thing about questions is that it gives yourself time to breathe. Right?
Yes.
You don't have to constantly give content, content, content. Once you go, okay, just very quickly, who here has an aha moment they want to share about what we just talked about? Or ask a question about your topic for people to, even if it was rhetorical, you throw that question out there expecting people to answer a certain way. But at least you throw it out there to the audience, and that moment gives you some time to go, okay. Let's just gather my breath again, gather my composure. Let's keep going. I need more time. Ask another question. So that you could buy some more time to get more comfortable. And the more you get people engaged and connect with the audience, that even makes your presentation and you more relatable to them. They'll remember you more because they feel that you've included them.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry too much about how much content I have. You have to worry about, okay, what are one or two things I really want to get out there? But to get that out there, I need to ask more questions, make it simple, be more comfortable. And I f find that that's very, very important when you're going up on stage or when you're on the virtual stage sharing a story or whatnot. So thanks for
Awesome.
that.
Awesome. Yeah,
Good
it's so
stuff.
good.
So next week or next episode, we'll be talking about a few more topics. I think we have a few more to go, and I can't wait to jump onto those topics.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. We'll see you again next time. Remember, when you speak with confidence, you have the voice of influence. We'll see you later.